It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so do you remember when Strong Bad Emails talked about techno music? Mm. The system is down. The system is down.
No.
He was made up a techno song on the thing, and it was just a bunch of random crap like that, sort of making fun of it. And I love this because back in the day, electronic dance music was generally just referred to as techno music. Mm-hmm. And it was... it had this bizarre quality that doesn't show up a lot anymore. And one of the big ones is they would just take a random phrase... frequently from an old sci-fi movie or something.
Like Pure Energy.
Exactly. Pure Energy was a great example of that. So, cut to now, and I'm watching cosplay videos, and they almost always have an EDM track or several EDM tracks on them. And there's this one I love, and I don't remember it now. I don't remember any of the music. All I remember is it's entirely... there's no vocals except... every 16 bars in the same place is very, very modulated down to deep like this. Is just somebody very quickly saying, "It's delicious." And that's it.
It's delicious.
Yes. And that's it. And so it's just like music, music, music. It's delicious. Music, music, music. But like so infrequently that you almost forget it happens until it happens again. And it is a terrible song. But it just tickles me to death because it's delicious. So, and it reminded me of back in the day when you'd say, "The system is down. The system is down." Yeah, and Pure Energy is always like the classic
spot
version.
Saying that.
Yes, Pure Energy, Energy, Energy. Although that was a little before techno days, but it was getting there.
Yeah, I don't think that was a techno song.
No, that was...
the band was called Pure Energy, right? Or the song?
I don't remember. "Don't You Want Me, Baby" was the song... "Don't You Want Me, Baby." Hmm. I think it was in that one. I thought. Maybe. No, wait. I'm mixing that one up with something else. Shit. All right. Well, some of our many, many listeners can correct us on this. We're in Pure Energy. Yes, I'm mixing it up with this song. I don't know. I think it was a New Wave thing. Whichever it was, I think it was New Wave.
Yeah, but it wasn't. It wasn't electronic.
No. Well, it was before techno was really a thing.
Yeah. But it's an example
of what you're talking about.
Regardless. Spock was saying that.
Yeah, Pure Energy. It's delicious. And he says it like that, so he's like vaguely surprised. Like, "It's delicious." Like, it's odd. But yeah, I think that's what the song is called, so you can look it up yourself and check it out. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is the internet's best kept secret. And I say this because nobody's talking about it. Therefore, it is the best kept secret. Like,
I guess so.
It's better kept than all the other secrets you know about, by definition. Because you don't know about this one. Except if you're listening, I guess you do. So don't...
they might not have known it was a secret, though.
Don't ruin it. Don't go telling people about it. Because then I will miss out on the joy I experience every time somebody's like, "You have a podcast?"
Yeah, right.
And it's all, nowadays, it's very much done... there's two versions. I like to say old people and young people, but it's not actually skewed by age at all. But it's skewed by, like, new media awareness. So, like, the young version is, "You have a podcast? Like, seriously? What the fuck is wrong with you?" And then the old version is, you have a podcast? Wow. You're like a tech genius. How do you do that? You're like a TV star, but on pods. And they both sound very similar. You usually have to see the facial expression to figure out the difference. But those people who don't realize what the barrier to entry to podcasting is, and those who do.
Right, that's right.
It's like, wow, you took the time to do that? Why? but here it is, and we did. And it's for you, people. We don't enjoy this at all. We've discussed this much offline. We both don't particularly care for each other. None of this is fun, but we do it because you demand it. So this is for you. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 400.
This is how much you demand it.
And with 400 episodes, someone can surely go through all that and find some nice phrases for techno music that they can use from the podcast. I can't think of any, but...
Vomit goblins. Immediately.
Yeah, but that's so early.
Vomit goblins.
That's one of the early ones. I mean, you got 400 episodes to choose from. You think they could come up with...
I just want a supercut of, like, me saying, okay, here's why you're wrong.
My friend, the guy I've written songs with since, like, 1982.
The other pilot fish?
Yeah. Every once in a while, he would... Because when we recorded, he would sometimes just let the recording go while we were having a conversation about something, because it was easier than shutting it off or whatever. And for a while there, for like every year, at the end of the year, he would make this song with things that I had said in a recording that I didn't know was recorded. And sometimes it was kind of embarrassing, but he did that for a long time.
Weird political rant.
No, just...
Conspiracy theories.
No, you know, you get... Especially when you've been working for a lot of hours or it's late, you get a little punchy and you say
that time where you just
things.
Said masturbation like 12 times in a row in a weird voice.
No.
For no context.
I think you're thinking of yourself.
I might have done that.
Yeah.
If not, I should do.
400 episodes, man.
Yeah, that's stupid. What is wrong with us?
It's looking more and more like we're going to make it to, like, doing this for 10 years, doing this for a whole decade.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised at all. We're already at, what, 8 or something?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be 8 in March?
No, it'll...
It was 11, yeah, so it'll be 8 in March.
We will have completed 8 in
Yes,
March.
We will finish 8 years worth.
So 2 more years, of course we're going to do
That'll happen.
Yeah, in a blink of an eye.
Oh, it's depressing.
And we'll be talking about how we've been doing this for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen.
I'm going to do a retrospective. How much we've changed. I'm pretty sure we can fit that into just like the opening segment of one episode.
I mean, just in the last 8 years, so much has happened. It's ridiculous.
Yes, but not to us in the podcast.
Oh.
I'm saying the podcast sounds pretty much the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, not a lot.
Just pick one. Anyone
we've
in the
lost
whole...
some of our songs.
Yeah, pick anything in there, and it'll sound exactly like this.
That's the EDM sample. And then give up.
I forgot about that.
Yes.
That only lasted like 2 seasons.
Oh, no. I would bring it back every once in a while. Well, even that thing the other day on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, where I said, like, I want to steal your lunch money and shove you in a locker. I'm like, I feel like I've said this before.
I'm sure you
I've
have.
Definitely thought it before many times.
Yep.
I feel like I've said it.
Yep.
That's what, okay. You're the one who actually listens. Transcribe an earlier episode, and then without telling anybody, we'll just literally recite the same episode.
They'd never know.
Yeah. I think you are right there.
They would never know. I mean... We've missed one. In 400 episodes, we've only missed one.
And we still put something out.
We
but
put
we didn't,
something out
we didn't
that
didn't record anything new.
That was
a classic,
a rerun. And Mark still, like, responded to it with his typical, like it was the first time he ever heard it. So, and I think I even listened to it again, like, well, I'm going to listen to this again, because maybe I don't remember it, and I didn't remember it. I didn't remember anything about it. It was the first mystery episode is what it was.
Okay.
If I recall. And we, even in that episode, we were talking about what the mystery episodes would be. And then I think the second and third one were that.
Back when we were really leaning into the premise.
Yeah. Right. It's still fun to do mystery episodes, though.
What do you mean? We don't do those.
I mean, because we don't have to get together and do it.
That's super fun. Not doing it for an episode, yeah. No.
Then someone else has to do it.
One time, I purposely just cut myself just so I could go to the hospital and we wouldn't be able to record.
Sometimes I think they do a better job than us. I don't know why I think
sometimes
that.
They do a better job than us.
Yeah.
But sometimes they do not. For those of you just joining us, welcome to episode 400.
We're talking about stuff they
fascinating
not anything
place
about.
To start. Does it feel weird to you? It feels weird to me, and I don't even know if you're listening.
Right.
But here's this works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, not you, because you just started listening. Other people, I suppose, but it could be you in the future. Cool people, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them. It's exciting, dynamic, special servants. Draw the note cards out. Oh, sorry. They manifest physically within the hat itself. Transmogrifies them. New little note cards with the information written on them manifest physically within the hat itself. We, blah, 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 servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air. Talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. I think that would be interesting, too, to see the evolution of me explaining this show.
Yeah.
Because that has, I know a lot of ways it has evolved, but yeah. I bet there's more I'm missing. Holy shit. Speaking of ridiculous things that are still happening, mostly I think the word transmogrify I put it in my head. They're going to try and do, Grant Morrison himself is trying to do a TV adaptation of The Invisibles. You don't know The Invisibles.
I don't.
The Invisibles, do you know Grant Morrison?
Yeah.
The Invisibles was probably his craziest project.
Oh.
As the thing I was reading, the phrase unfilmable gets tossed around a lot, but this...
Because they're invisible?
No, this is just... This is like...
Unfilmable, yep.
You know how the 90s had sort of a resurgence of weird new agey shit? Like, this was that weird new agey shit. It had an absolutely insane plot involving, like, extra-dimensional hyper-reality insurgent terrorists and things. But as it's come up frequently, it was just whatever the fuck he felt like writing about. And, like, it was all bizarre and reality isn't what you think it is just constantly. And, like, was hard to follow in some cases and things. I cannot imagine it as a TV show. But... I sure as hell check it out if it is. Somebody's texting me, probably wishing me a congratulatory
400th episode.
Yeah. Oh, it's the wife.
Why? Do people know you're taping your 400th episode? Tonight?
No, nobody knows that. I had forgotten just until you were about to say it, and I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I am not ready for a 400th episode. I am exhausted. This week has been very rough.
Why that?
Oh, all sorts of reasons. Trish is gone all this week.
Oh.
That's why she's texting. Yeah, she's been out all week. So I've been kind of on my own. I don't know. I had a couple really bad days at work. And those were rough. Being on my own for a whole week's a little rough. The midterm elections... came out really meh. Like, this is a problem. Like, there had been so much tension and buildup, and I'm like, I'm either going to be really happy or really sad. And the answer is, no, I'm kind of both.
Yep.
They managed to somehow pull that shit off. a lot of racist white guys still got elected, but a lot of racist white guys didn't, and a lot of women got elected, a lot of people of color got elected, a lot of people of other religions got elected. And, you know, the Dems got the House back, so theoretically they can at least obstruct shit for Trump for a couple years, like, which at this point is better than nothing. But, yeah, everybody was really shocked that Steve King still managed it, and I'm like, I'm not. All these new revelations are the same shit we've always known about him. He is he is very clearly a white nationalist, always has been. I don't know why people were suddenly shocked by these revelations, because this is the same fucker who said you can't build your civilization with other people's babies. This is the same fucker who said that every civilization, every major accomplishment in civilization was done by white people. None of this is new.
I even heard a lot of Republicans who were surprised and a little dismayed, actually, that he won.
Dismayed? Yeah. No, absolutely. Like, I'm embarrassed to be an Iowan because of that, but not surprised.
I was surprised. I didn't think
you that. Really thought it would work. Seriously, this is no new stuff. And I was this kind of shit's
come
out
before. I know that. But
you just thought the other guy was gonna.
Yeah, I just thought the other and watching the early results, it's like, well, maybe this is. And the fact of the matter is, before the midterms, Iowa, for a very long time, had for the House of Representatives 4 districts. Had one Democrat, which is the district we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Corville and Iowa City are in the same district, aren't
they? Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And then everyone else was Republican. So yeah. 2 seats were flipped in Iowa.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
Cool.
In the first district that's just north of us that includes Dubuque, Abby Finkenauer, I guess is her name.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz noticed her, an ad of hers or something, and brought it, I think, to our attention.
Mm.
She won. And in south, in the I guess it's the third district, in south west Iowa, a woman won there, a Democrat.
Come on.
And these 2 women are the first female congresspeople Iowa is sending to Congress.
Wow.
And that's weird when you think about it, because Joni Ernst was our first female senator ever. And that was just like.
I even knew that.
I think that was.
That's too bad because she's shitty.
She was our first female senator ever. These are our first congresspeople ever. And Kim Reynolds was our first female governor ever. And, of course, now she's been duly elected.
I was going to say, but yeah, before she just took over because Branstad went to China or whatever.
But all of those female firsts are within the last 6 or 7 years.
I believe it's a record number of women in Congress for this next one.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yep. Especially when you take the 2 houses together. So...
There's a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of bad stuff. I very purposely avoided the results. I'm like, I don't want to play this out over time. The tension was on. And I'm wondering if that's part of why I'm feeling exhausted now. I think there was a lot of tension built up around the midterms for me, and it's like, now it's over. And so my body's
we're done. We have a new Democratic senator in the State House in Des Moines.
Is that the guy with moms?
Yeah.
No, that was cool.
I'm forgetting his name, too, for some reason.
I don't remember his name, but yeah, he basically defended his 2 mothers mm-hmm. when they wanted to get legally married. And
while he was still in high school at West High. And he came and spoke. One of the kids was in the National Honor Society, and he came and spoke at that.
Mm.
Why can't I remember his name? Anyway, he's our senator now in the State House. Because Dvorsky, our senator before, he retired.
We also had another mass shooting this week. Fresh on the heels of one last week.
You mean just last night?
Yeah. So, I'm just exhausted. I'm ready for my wife to be home. I'm ready for this week to be over. I was not prepared for 400 episodes. But we have 2 weeks we have to catch up on. I think there's a lot of shit you and I talked about that we didn't talk about on here, so we got to fix that.
Really?
How was your 2 weeks? I don't think I had finished either Hill House or Christine McConnell when we last recorded.
You finished...
Some other shit has happened.
You finished that second one, McConnell.
I did finish... Have you gone back and watched it at all?
We've watched it, but the other things have been distracting us because there's other shows on.
Mm-hmm.
let's see. I read Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, you did read it.
Yes.
And?
I think there's a lot of it that I didn't understand. This, you know, I think it's well written. I think it's me. I don't think it's her. I think it's very well written. I think it's very interesting and compelling. And it's certainly...
Well, and you have a weird relationship with fiction.
Yeah. It's certainly a... You know, it's kind of a watershed in horror because, you know, the house is a kind of a character in the thing and so on and so forth. Nothing had really done that before. The closest you can get to something sort of doing that is Nathaniel Hawthorne's House of Seven Gables, and it still wasn't what this was. I think it might be one of the first successful fictional books that incorporates a group of paranormal investigators.
But yeah, especially because at the time that was still a rare thing.
59.
Yeah.
I liked it. It's well written, but there were times where I got confused about what was going on. And like you say, I have a very odd relationship with fiction. I think one of the reasons why I like 19th century fiction so much is because that everything's very obvious. You know, there's nothing really subtle about it. And there was a lot of subtlety in what she was writing that I think just got past me because I'm not very good at reading that kind of thing. But I would recommend it. It's very short. It's a thin book, you know, it's like that.
It's even thinner on my Kindle.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I totally recommend it. As I already knew, it didn't bear any resemblance to the show at all.
No.
The show could have been named something completely different and named the character slightly different, and you know, intelligent viewers would have known it was was inspired in some.
Yeah, there were some thematic things.
But there were thematic things that were similar to Stephen King and thematic things that were similar to other things. So
well, and it's one of the looser adaptations.
Right, so...
There have been other versions that were closer to the original.
Yeah, so if they'd called it something else, nobody would have thought it was ripping off or anything. They just would have thought it was its own thing inspired by King and Jackson and several other people. I kind of wish they'd done that because it's very different. I mean,
I think it seldom... maybe never goes that way, especially if... I assume this person started from a perspective of, I want to do an adaptation of Haunting of Hill House. And if they did that, nobody's going to be like, you know what? It might work better if we didn't associate it with the known property. I don't think that happens. I'm sure that's true.
But it's strange that...
But I'm also making big assumptions. It could have been a thing that somebody was like, you know what we could call this? Because that shit happens all the time.
But then they would have had to change everyone's name because
I don't think they would have had a problem with that. The freaking fourth... Pirates of the Caribbean movie was a completely unrelated script.
Yeah.
That then they just morphed into that.
Well, it's kind of surprising that...
I think a couple of the Saw movies were like that.
It's kind of surprising that an adaptation of the book wouldn't adhere closely to the book, considering how short the book is.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to probably cut out anything.
But we've had a lot of adaptations, and a lot of them have done weird,
yeah,
sometimes terrible things with
Well,
it.
Interestingly... one thing that I thought about the book when I finished it was that it wasn't clear to me that the events that the haunting was really going on so much in reality as it was in a particular character's head.
I think that was intentional, and I think that was another big thing about that book is it was one of the first ones where you're like, we don't know.
Well,
which it is.
I read somewhere, and maybe it was just in Wiki, so I don't even know if this is reliable. I don't remember where I read it, but that the first time it was adapted, they were going to go for that. It was the film was going to make a definitive statement, a twist at the end kind of thing. That it was all in Nell's head, and they took this to Shirley Jackson at the time. And while she thought the idea was clever and interesting, she insisted that that's not what she intended at all. She intended for all readers to come away thinking that it was a real haunting and not to doubt.
You sucked at it, Shirley.
Well, but see...
Also, I can't figure out why no one in the lottery gets any money.
I kind of like the lottery. I remember reading that in high school, and I think I even saw like a video that was a dramatic...
Yeah, there have been a couple of versions of it, yeah.
But I recommend the book. I don't know if everyone's going to like it because I wasn't sure. Again, I feel like I probably didn't quite get it. So maybe I'm not a very good person to speak about how good or bad it is.
I want to read the book. I've seen a few adaptations. I think, honestly, my favorite of the ones I've seen, and there are some key ones I haven't, but I really liked the Haunting of Hell House, which was a 72, I want to say. Roddy McDowall is in it, is the big thing. I thought that one was really good because, I don't know, I felt a lot more character development in that one than a lot of versions. Although at this point, of course, my favorite adaptation is this one that we just saw.
Right. Well, I'm not sure. Amazing. I'm not sure the book does. The characters in the book are very interesting.
Yeah.
But it's a very brief book. So
keep in mind, though, I'm not saying the one that well, first of all, I haven't read the book, but also often my favorite adaptation isn't necessarily the one that adhered to the book the most.
Right.
I have definitely experienced somewhere I'm like, hey, you did better, or you did stuff that was cool, because doing it the way in the book in a movie would have been dumb.
Right.
The same way doing it in the movie in a book would have been dumb.
And honestly, to be fair, usually if I read a book, even if it doesn't resonate particularly with me, always thinking of how to tell the story in a television show or a movie or whatever, I often put the book down thinking, I think I know how I could make this into a good TV show or movie. I didn't feel that way at all with this. Again, because some of this stuff sort of confused me, and I'm not sure. I think I would need someone to help me grasp some of the stuff that Shirley Jackson was doing so I could translate it into the visual. And maybe I'd even decide that I'm not equipped to translate it into the visual. Because there was a lot of stuff going on Well, the reason that some people read it and they wonder if it really happened is because so much is going on in Nell's head.
Yeah.
That's the thing that throws you off. And also...
Well, don't tell too much more. I don't want you to spoil
too
much.
Okay, sorry.
For me or for the listeners.
Well, I also read The House of the Seven Gables by Nathaniel Hawthorne. It was so good.
You love Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Oh, yeah.
He's your boyfriend.
I also got a book from the library that was his complete short stories. And I sort of did some research to find out which ones were most appropriate for, like, you know, ghost stories around the campfire kind of thing. Because not all of his short stories are like that.
And
I mean, his most famous work, obviously, is The Scarlet Letter. And it's not creepy or anything that I know
of. I mean, from feminist literary critique, it kind of
Right. So I was really just interested in the stuff that, because he's usually thought of, the way I've seen him talked about in several sources, is they call what he writes dark romanticism, which is not the same as, say, gothic or uncanny gothic I like. But he has written some of that stuff. And so that's what I was looking for. And it was all so good. I mean, and better than Poe, I think. Better than Poe's stuff. So
I recently saw the first Simpsons Halloween special again. And it has the Raven in it.
Mm.
And
eat my shorts. That's what the Raven says.
No, but Bart is the Raven.
Yeah, Bart is the Raven. Eat my shorts, he says.
Nevermore. but here's the, and I forget this. James Earl Jones did a lot of voice work on The Simpsons in the early days. There are a couple of places that were very clearly him, but there's other times that, like, because, you know, normally you get James Earl Jones when you're doing the but then there's a couple of times where I'm like, I think that's him there. I think he was just sort of a voice actor on it. But he does the narration for it.
Oh.
But Homer is playing the narrator.
Yeah.
And says all the dialogue.
Yep.
And Bard's the bird. And I forget, and it's so ingrained into my head now, things where he's like, leave no feather behind as a token of the lie thou hast spoken. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from off my door. And Bard's like, nevermore. And he's like, take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy. And then there's a whole extended sequence where it shifts. But that's always in my head. I just love, take thy beak from out my heart.
I like the Raven quite a bit. Poe's Raven. There was a time where I could recite most of it, but I never got to the point where I could recite it all.
All right, let's talk about the most recent Haunting of Hill House.
Okay.
Because we got to talk about it. Because we saw it. You and I seem to agree on, like, everything associated with it.
Yeah, I think so.
What I'm finding amazing is everybody seems to agree with everything about it, with one notable exception. But everybody watches it. Everybody says it's really good. Mm-hmm. Everybody says it's scary as fuck. Like, I'm talking to my parents on the phone, and my sister was there because she was visiting them. And so she could sort – we had it on speaker so she could hear in the background. And I knew they wouldn't have, but I was like, hey, Sarah, did you watch The Haunting of Hill House? She's like, what? I said, The Haunting of Hill House. She's like, yeah, we did, and it scared the bejesus out of me. Everybody agrees on that, and everybody agrees that it's really good, it's really scary, and that the ending sucked.
You know, that's like, interesting, yeah.
I literally asked somebody's walking down the hall that he and I trace off. I was like, have you seen The Haunting of Hill House? He's like, yep, the ending sucked. I'm like, yes, it did.
Yep.
There is one exception.
That's true.
My boss does not think the ending sucked.
I think it sucked as much as other people think it did. Well, but...
and here's the thing. I agree with all the reasons she doesn't think it sucked, and she seems to agree with most of the reasons I think it sucked.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very much a prioritizing thing.
Exactly. Yep. Agreed.
But, and again, without spoiling things, everybody seems to agree that sort of the last third or whatever, that last episode kind of sucked, except my boss. I personally think, and you seem to agree with this too, the last episode almost feels like it was written by someone else. It's just...
weirdly, yeah.
It's not badly written, but it's way sloppier than the rest of the writing for some reason.
The tone changes ever so slightly.
And the whole, it makes me feel a little bit like certain authors who don't know how to end their books.
Yeah, that's right.
Like Neil Stephenson, who I love to death, but he cannot end a book. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, we got to clear this up. And I mean, there's some really good stuff in that last episode. There's some really not good stuff in that episode. And I don't know why. But it absolutely is worth it. And... here's the thing. It doesn't... there are reasons why I don't think the ending is good and why a lot of people don't seem to think the ending is good. They aren't reasons that, like, retroactively fuck it up. Like, sometimes those happen. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, oh, man, it turned out it was this or whatever, and that just sort of ruins the whole thing. Or...
Lost was kind of like that.
They never answered a goddamn thing, and I'm stuck with it. No, none of that happens. You absolutely get resolution... The explanations insofar as they are there are fine. It's very much about presentation and a little bit about some epilogue bullshit. But it doesn't, like, the series is still really good and you should still definitely watch that episode. It would be weird to stop before that episode.
Right.
So still highly, highly recommend it. Was very cool. So I'm an idiot. Excuse me.
What do you mean?
I'm still working on the book. It's actually coming along pretty nice.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking before. I said it was like 47,000 words when I finished it before. It's like 67 now. And most of that, I don't know when that happened. When I looked at it, it was already like 63 or something. So I don't know if... in those first few chapters, I wrote a lot that I don't remember when I was rewriting, or if I just was wrong the first time. I don't know. But it's a lot further along. I'm probably about a third of the way through, and I'm making pretty steady progress, and I like that. There are some major changes such that I'm... not like major plot changes, but like dialogue changes and stuff, such that I am really glad a whole new set of editors is going to look at it. Because there's things that I'm like, this is outside the lines of what we were discussing with the first editors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. So I'm not playing any new video games because I'm doing this. I've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Can't do it yet. Got to do this. When I do play a new video game, it's going to be Assassin's Creed Origins.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it's either going to be Monster Hunter World or No Man's Sky. After that, it's going to be Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And after that, it's going to be whichever those other two I didn't do.
Okay.
All right. But can't do that right now. Writing. Have to finish this draft first. Yeah, as we gotta start a new game.
Tisk tisk.
Ask me.
What game?
Fallout 4.
That's not a new game.
No, but I started a new game of it.
Why did you do that?
'Cause I'm an idiot.
Oh.
Yes, Fallout 4. That I already beat, and that I put, for me, a record number of hours into.
Sure, yeah.
for some goddamn reason, I started a brand new game.
Huh.
I don't know what's wrong with me.
I don't either.
That's not what you're supposed to say. Yeah, dude, what the fuck?
I don't know.
The only sort of theories I can get from this, well, there's a couple things. One of it is it very much falls into that thing where, like, you feel like you're accomplishing things in that game.
Hmm.
And so that, you know, dopamine thing.
Sure.
But the thing about it is there's all this stuff about Fallout 76. And everything about Fallout 76 looks terrible to me. And everything I've heard, with, like, one exception, but for almost everybody I've heard, it's terrible, exactly in the way I think of it, because it's a Fallout MMO.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds awful. But it's really got me jonesing for Fallout again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so then I do this. So, and it's weird. I'm trying to play it very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Which is surprisingly not as easy as I would have thought. There are just certain things that I'm like, oh no, I have to do it this way. Doing a lot more stealth. I'm thinking I'm going to do a lot more melee. It's just happening. I'm sucking at it for some reason. I have the difficulty set on the lowest possible difficulty.
Mm.
And I'm dying.
Mm.
And I don't know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of scrounging that I kind of forgot about. And I think because when you're playing through a game like this the first time, it's kind of interesting to scratch, because you're going into a building, you don't know what the fuck you're going to find in there. Some shit could happen, you know. And some shit does happen. But now, like, I know what the shit is that happens in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not interesting. And meanwhile, I got to search through every goddamn file cabinet and every freaking desk and everything. Like, so I think it's more tedious that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also aspects that came later in, like, certain perks and stuff that I really liked, so I'm trying to get them now.
Mm-hmm.
But that I'm just not as strong, I think, is part mm-hmm. of what it is. I haven't mm-hmm. put the points in the right place. I haven't spent enough time getting good gear and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's harder. But I think it's fine. I don't think I'm going to play it. I think it's going to be one of those let off some steam, kind of, like, sure. You know, I just feel like wandering around the wasteland with my dog, shooting mutants, sure. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I will progress, but kind of slowly. I'm taking it much slower with the settlements.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've already built up sanctuary. I haven't done anything to that gas station yet. Although, this is funny, too. I put walls around the sanctuary, just around, like, two houses.
Because
I'm like, we all fit in here. I don't want to have to build it around this whole damn town. I'll build the walls here. I can put one turret on either side. We're fine.
We can all get in here.
Well, that's where I put all the beds anyway. Mm-hmm. So, still playing a female character, of course. My last one was black. This one is Indian.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun. I mean, I'll play it after we're done here. Haven't been reading a lot. I'm still in the Raven cycle. I haven't been reading a lot. I just haven't. I don't know why exactly. Just finished watching a web series by James Acaster called Sweet Home Kettering. James Acaster is from a town called Kettering. Mm. So it's a play on Sweet Home Alabama. And it's a documentary of him going back to his town to, like, revisit everything.
Mm.
It's a joke. Like, it's a cringe comedy sort of joke. Like, it's a joke that, like, it all kind of sucks and nobody remembers him and all stuff like that. But it's interesting that I didn't figure it out until the second episode. The first episode, I was just worried that the series was really bad.
Mm.
But then I kind of figured it out. It helped that in the second one, it became this thing where his sound person is also from that town, and, like, everybody was remembering her and talking up, and I finally sort of put it together. But at first I was like, this just kind of sucks. But that's fine, because, you know, I love James Acaster. I'm obsessed with James Acaster.
I don't think I did know that.
Yeah, we've talked about this. I told you, watch the thing on Netflix.
Oh.
Watch this stuff. It's called Repertoire on Netflix, and it's four different comedy specials, although they're all sort of tied together. Watch it on Netflix. It's good stuff. And I made you watch the cabbage thing.
Yes, now I remember.
Yeah. Well, and Jazz is the one who first brought him up in conversation. Yeah. I don't remember why. Jazz, why did you bring him up?
I don't remember that.
Shh, I'm waiting for Jazz to answer. She did.
Okay.
Which is weird, because I already knew him.
Mm-hmm.
But she brought him up in email
mm.
and was talking about him. And I was like, that's weird. And I don't remember why. And I feel bad, because he's another goddamn white guy. And I'm tired of liking white guys. But he's funny, and he's uniquely funny, in my opinion. Actually, and there's a different web show I've been watching called Just Puddings. That is... It's a like a little travelogue thing going to places that make desserts.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to like this company that's famous for this thing. It's all through Britain. It's another British web series. What's funny is that one is hosted by Ed Gamble, who's a different comedian I like. And he is quite famously a type 1 diabetic. Mm. So he can't eat any of this shit.
Mm.
So he brings along James Acaster to taste everything and like... pressures him to like in really elaborate ways to describe like how it, there's a lot of like what relative would you give this to and things like that involved, and they do a lot of playing off each other, and he does a lot of things where he'll like make him eat things because he doesn't care. So like they went where there was this fudge place and he mixed together all the fudges into one horrible flavor, and he's like, no, go ahead, try that, because he doesn't have to eat it. But and it's just inherently funny because it's a dessert show hosted by a guy who cannot / will not eat any of it. So that's kind of fun too. But Jazz, yeah, tell us why or how or what you brought up James Acaster. But check him out. His stuff on Netflix is really good.
There's been a lot of Red Dead Redemption played at our house.
Oh, yeah. How is that going?
I don't know. I mean, she likes it, but I think the controls are really frustrating. Like,
are they particularly different from last time? Or has it just been a while?
I think they might be different, but here's the thing. I don't know, because I'm not playing these games, but it seems like more and more she'll complain about how the controllers are expected to do more stuff, which means one button might do 6 different things depending on
context
yeah. and things like that. So, and that's bad for her because she will push the wrong button. And not only that, but these buttons are put together in such a way, pressing the wrong button isn't just, oops, I need to press the other button. Pressing the wrong button could mean you pull your gun and shoot somebody.
That's the thing, yeah. It's when it's like, if you stand close enough to a thing, circle button opens the box or whatever. If you're not quite close enough to the box, it's your shoot button.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little bit of that with Fallout right now.
It's weird, and so she runs into that. But also, the game has, the previous game had a little bit of this, has a behavioral matrix kind of thing where you can be honorable or dishonorable or whatever.
But you get a mask this time if you're being bad.
That's true. But the plot of it, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of an open world, so you can do whatever you want. And she, most of the play she's done so far is like just getting through the tutorial part of the game, and she
basically... And then just doing whatever the fuck she wants.
Yeah, doing whatever she wants. Yeah. Partly because the next thing to do in the plot is to break somebody out of jail, which is going to mess
up... Sorry, I farted.
Which is going to mess up her honorable score, which she doesn't want to do. So she's going around helping people and doing all this stuff, and her honor score is going up and up and up. She doesn't want to break this guy out of jail. And she's actually tried to do it a couple times, and she got killed, because when you try to break this guy out of jail, all hell breaks loose in this town and everything else. Mm. So, also, something she likes from...
This is the same woman, though, who totally completed the extra hard expansion to Horizon Zero Dawn before actually really starting the story.
That's true.
To Horizon Zero Dawn.
Another thing,
none of this surprises me.
What she liked about one of the things she liked about the previous game was how you could break horses, and then you could sell them or keep them or whatever. In this game, you break a horse, you take it to a livery stable, and
they eat it.
No, the guy says, well, I can't pay you full price because that might be stolen. So he might offer you a dollar for this horse that if you bought the horse from him would cost $500.
Hate that guy.
So, now that would be fine if there was a way to forge papers. I mean, you're a criminal, for gosh sakes. Why can't you forge papers? Or you could go to, one thing you could do in the previous game is you could go to a ranch that had horses and you could get paid to break the horses they had.
Yeah, that's what I did.
And, but there doesn't seem to be anything like that. Mm. So she's kind of bothered. And you have to make money in this game, not just for yourself, but for your whole gang. So, and it's just really hard to make money, and it's hard to get pelts, because to get a pelt that makes enough money, you've got to first target an animal that's of a certain quality, and then you basically have to kill it in one shot, because each shot degrades the quality. And if it's a poor quality, you get basically nothing for it. So it's kind of frustrating, the game, but she likes it. She loves playing it.
And this is why I love being a late adopter to things. But first of all, I probably won't play this, but if I do play it, by the time I play it, one of two things will have happened. One, there will be many easy beginner's guides that will say the easy way to earn money in the beginning is this. Yeah, yeah. Or two, if it is so tough, they will have patched it.
Yeah, yeah, right. Right.
I don't like trailblazing this shit.
She does like, and it's beautiful. Oh my gosh, it looks so good. I can't even believe how good it looks. But yeah, she likes playing it. She plays it every chance she gets. And
I kind of discovered Twitch.
Oh yeah, I've been avoiding it, but
I decided because too many people I know, and so I'm not subscribing to anything or whatever. But I was just looking around. That's why I suddenly was interested in Monster Hunter World, because I watched some people playing it, and it looked kind of cool. And I'm still convinced by my friends that I can play it without having to play with other people if I don't want to. So I think I might check that out at some point, but we'll see. We're getting low on time. We should probably actually draw something out of the hat. I mean, it'd be sad if for our 400th we didn't draw anything.
I'm still reading a lot, by the way. Reading ghost stories and things. Wow. Like that. I would still be reading Hawthorne if I didn't have to take the books back to the library.
Mm.
He's really good. I really like Nathaniel Hawthorne.
I should make you read some other shit. You're in a fiction reading mood.
But right now I'm reading ghost stories. And I'll probably be doing that for the next several weeks.
Who's it from?
Jazz.
I don't know if we should read. She still hasn't answered me about the James Acaster thing, and we've been sitting here for a while.
Jazz wants to know.
What does Jazz want to know?
Where do angels fear to tread?
I don't know, but whenever I hang out there, I see a lot of fools rushing in. I find this weird. I mean, obviously, but no, I find the concept, because this is the thing: fools rush in where angels fear to tread, or fools rush in where wise men fear to tread.
Mm-hmm. That's the Elvis version.
Yes. No, and the Michael McDonald version, but that's what a fool believes he sees. The wise man has the power to reason away. What a fool believes he sees. Wise man has the power.
We were just talking about him recently for some reason. I know why, because sometimes when we're driving back and forth from Des Moines, where my family lives, and it seems like there's such a long way to go. And so he's remembering that Christopher Cross song, and we've got such a long way to go, and then McDonald sings such a long way to, you know. That.
Yeah.
So, such a long way so sometimes to when go. I say, God, we have such a long way to go, then I'll go, such a long way to go.
Michael McDonald.
And my wife will laugh. It's
is
like, what
the
is that?
The primary example, the first and foremost that I always go to, of singers that I listened to for many, many years thinking they were black.
Oh, yeah.
And then found out they weren't. Rick Astley, also in that category. I don't know what that is. But anyway, no. But here's the thing. So I understand the concept with wise men. Fools, they're like, whatever, it's dangerous or whatever. It's like, fools, like, fuck it. Wise men's like, that's a terrible idea. That is what makes the man wise, is that he knows that is a terrible idea, whereas the fool does not. Where the fuck do angels come into this?
I don't know.
Like,
if we're speaking literally, there's virtually no definition.
Well, if we're speaking literally, angels don't actually exist. But
I'm saying if we're going to presume literal angels,
yeah.
There's basically no type of angel I've ever been presented in fiction or myth that would fear to tread anywhere.
Oh, no. You could definitely have, but it'd be like, oh, this is a very dark, evil part of hell or some shit like that.
There might be places they wouldn't go.
But then the fools are like, I don't know why the fools would go there either. What if we're not talking about literal angels, we're just talking about Charlie's angels?
Again, I'm not sure there's any place they're afraid of. They're badasses.
Judo.
But, I mean, angels... places angels might be offended to tread.
Yes.
Like, we're not afraid to go there. We just don't want to. It's very distasteful. I'm not sure why.
Was it Orphan Black? I'm still watching Orphan Black. Still loving it. I just now got into season 2. I think that was where there was something recently where the cops show up and they're like, you can't be here. I thought you couldn't be here. It's like holy ground or something.
I don't know. Angels...
Is it weird that Allison might be becoming my favorite character in Orphan Black?
No.
I feel like that's not right.
Why?
Because everybody's supposed to like Cosima the best. And Cosima? Allison's horrible.
No.
But I'm starting to love her.
She's not horrible.
But here's the thing I discovered. So, you know, a lot of characters in that show. Most of them played by the same woman. But very popular character of Felix.
Yeah.
The brother to our POV character. Fun fact, he apparently is actually American, and he's faking that British accent.
Right.
He does an amazing job.
We've talked about that.
But he's very popular, and I think I figured it out, and it may not be because he's as good as we think he is.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I noticed because there was some Allison Felix stuff, and I was like, they have really good chemistry. And I was like, wait. That actor has really good chemistry with that actress. Which means that character has really good chemistry with, like, 7 different characters.
Right.
So we think it's really impressive because he plays so well off of all these characters. But in fact, it's just that actor playing well off of one actress. So it's not nearly as impressive as we think it is.
I suppose.
So he's cheating. But I still have that now. My brain just won't acknowledge that they're the same person most of the time because it can't cope with it. But anyway, sorry. Go back to your angels.
I don't... I've heard that expression.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, of course, you just take it as...
Excuse me. Yeah.
Kind of this hypothetical place that's so bad even angels fear to go there. But that's how bad it is, because you don't think of angels as being afraid of anything.
Well, I wonder if it's the how old this phrase is, because... I think there's definitely a point in history, maybe a pretty large point in history, where angel was just sort of synonymous with ideal man.
Like a saint?
Kind of, yeah.
I suppose.
I want to say there's references in Shakespeare's like that, perhaps, too. Where an angel is just the ultimate version of a man.
Sure.
In which case, then you're just saying, uber wise man. It's weird how the word Uber has just snuck into our vernacular. Mm. I think I was in college when it first became a thing.
That's probably right.
And now it's just everywhere. I mean, ride-sharing app aside. That's weird, I think. Sorry.
For some reason, this question is actually perplexing me. I'm not sure we're supposed to take it very seriously, but...
I hope not.
But for some reason, it's perplexing me.
And if we are supposed to take it seriously, Jez is apparently trying to hide from angels and wants to know where would be the best place. I can tell you the sequel to the book I'm currently reading might address that. But I'm not going to write that for quite some time. Speaking of, I have committed to having this draft done by the end of next year.
Mm. No, that's good.
No, I hope, I really hope and actually expect to have it done long before then.
Sure, sure, sure.
But I'm at the point where I'm actually willing to commit to that.
Yeah, yeah. Good.
Because it's really starting to come along. And I really want to be done. So I can play video games. Oh, wait. Already doing that. Why? Because I'm an idiot.
It's not a new video game, though.
Yeah. I was messing with that rule earlier.
I'm not going to say you're not cheating, but no, you're not cheating really bad.
No, but I'm cheating in a terrible way because this is, instead of starting like Assassin's Creed Origins, which max I put 30 or 40 hours into, I'm starting over on a game that I already put over 300 into. It's a terrible idea.
Which you might not be.
In my defense, though, when I come home in the evenings, I am generally, the rule is I have to write before I can do it. So I've been writing pretty good with Trish gone because I just come home and I make myself write. Sure. Yeah. So that's good. And I never seem to be able to do much at a time. Like, three chapters is far and away the most I've done in a sitting. Two is more common. One is not unheard of. But there's also cheating there. I'm breaking up a lot of chapters that were too long or that I feel. Some of them I'm breaking up. There's one where I'm like, I just need another chapter in here. And so I did that. But then, yeah, there's some others that I'm breaking up because they're too huge.
Let me ask you a quick question that might be somewhat related to this question that Jazz asked. Because, you know,
what fool believes.
I, you might know this. I don't know. Maybe I've talked about this before. But I was raised, even though I was raised with a religion, or a Christian, you know,
yes,
upbringing, not raised with belief in supernatural stuff or paranormal stuff at all. Okay. In fact, for a long time, if people only knew me through, like, we worked together on scientific stuff, sociology or whatever, they could swear I was an atheist.
And yet, you did believe, you just didn't know it.
No.
That guy
fixing the clock.
I'm
trying to ask you a question here. So,
I never hired anyone to fix that clock.
So, for me, science had to be atheistic because otherwise, God's a very sloppy creator if he's leaving these gaps all over the place that are supposed to be proof of his existence. So when I do science, it's very atheistic in nature. I'm not a big believer in supernatural, whatever. My wife is somewhat skeptical, but she's more of a believer than I am.
Okay.
And so as I'm reading all of this gothic literature, uncanny gothic literature, and we're watching horror movies and stuff, we start to talk about these things. That's one of the reasons why we got to talking about interdimensional phenomena, and that's why I put that in the blog and everything. Mm. But so what I want to ask you is, the last time we talked about this kind of thing was very early on in the podcast, because I talked about an experience I had that I didn't think was paranormal or supernatural,
but some other people
might think it was.
Yeah.
And early on in us doing this, you were not an atheist at that time.
No. Yeah.
So my question for you is, where do you stand on supernatural / paranormal / whatever phenomena? Is it just it doesn't happen, or it might happen, you're open-minded about it, or what's your view on it now?
It almost entirely, I don't believe it happens.
Okay.
The exception being science is always incomplete.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to believe, oh, there's a phenomenon we didn't know about. Right, oh, right, there's right. Like, but I think that is, I still think that essentially every supernatural thing I've ever heard about is far more likely not true.
To be true, right.
And that's what so much of what finally tipped me in terms of being atheist was the more you learn about how the human mind works, the more very simple explanations for why we experience these things, for why we remember things certain ways, for how we can be certain about shit that absolutely did not happen,
right,
is just there. And it's like, that answer is almost always so much easier and more likely.
Likely.
Such intensely Occam's razor. Like the story you told me. Mm-hmm. At the time, I'm like, whoa, I've experienced it. Now I'm like, that was 100% in your head.
Yeah,
dude.
Right.
That was absolutely in my mind. Now.
And that's what I've always thought, even since back then, because of how I was taught.
And I am definitely not a militant atheist. I think that's the best way to put it. There are some I am an agnostic atheist. I like this. It may have been the Saturday Morning Breakfast cereal guy. Some guy had two axes of theist and atheist, how much you believe in God, mm-hmm. and then Gnostic and agnostic of how sure you are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely atheist, but I'm fairly agnostic atheist in that it would be incredibly hubristic. What is the proper adjective for that?
It would arrogant
be super arrogant on my part to assume that, no, I've got a grasp of how the universe is. I think me and my anthropology degree kind of
have it nailed
that down.
Yeah,
no, that would be ridiculous, but just everything people are telling me, I'm like, yeah, there's a much simpler explanation.
Yeah.
And even the ones where I'm like, I can't tell you the explanation, I'm like, I still think
there probably is one.
Yeah, I find it weird that, like, no, this is going to be the thing. Oh, my God, there really are werewolves. Like, no. Like,
okay, well, then you and I are by now then kind of on the same page. Because even when I had some of those experiences when I was a teenager, I didn't walk away from them thinking they were supernatural or anything, because I was raised to not think that way. And now I'm still open-minded. I mean, I want to hear other people's stories. If I'm wrong, I would like to know that. Like you said, science could discover something else. So I'm open to it. But
And your belief in God is very much a sort of atavistic, just that there is some power over things. It doesn't necessarily impact how the universe works directly.
In fact, it doesn't make sense to me that it would. Yeah. My personal religious belief. So
that difference in our belief almost becomes a philosophical.
That's
one.
Exactly right.
Because I'm totally willing to believe in a God that doesn't in any way influence anything. Like, that could be
thing. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm completely deistic, but my belief system doesn't make sense to me that the God that created everything would be involved in it in a miraculous or supernatural way. So when I take in this stuff, these movies and these books, I think I experience them a little bit different than someone who might have a tendency to believe. I mean, I suspend disbelief so I can feel creepy if it's really well written. I mean, I can feel a little shiver up my spine or whatever, but it doesn't make me lose sleep or have nightmares.
I don't know, though, because as somebody who's been on both sides of that equation, I don't think it changed my view of these things.
In how you experience the entertainment?
I don't think so.
So it still can freak you out, just like it did before.
It absolutely can.
Yeah,
well, and I told you, this is freaking found footage ones messing me up. Now, as I have grown older, I am less freaked out by that in general, but that's been going on for a long time and had nothing to do with my belief.
Huh, that's interesting.
Even when I still, although to be fair, I haven't really believed in ghosts and demons for a long time.
Sure.
But I mean, I still, you know, the supernatural was still a thing. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I don't
think it has changed it for me.
I do experience a sense of the uncanny in things, and I enjoy that. That's why I read this stuff. But it doesn't. It goes away right away. I mean, I have to have a really heavy suspension of disbelief, because I've never believed in that stuff, and so it doesn't really.
I think for
me,
it's just the same as fantasy.
Oh, okay, sure.
I appreciate it on the same level. And it's, you know, sometimes your fantasy characters are really dark and creepy and evil. And like, oh, that's the thing.
I think I appreciate it on the level of comedy. Because to me, to write a good ghost story, for example, there has to be a setup. And the little shudder that you get is kind of the punchline, right?
Yeah.
So it's like the form of it seems to be the same. So I appreciate a good ghost story just like I appreciate a good joke.
And as we've discussed, horror and such like that are very trope filled.
Which
reminds me, we're over time, we should end, but I wanted to do one thing. There was something. I saw a movie on Netflix. It's called Apostle. Just came out last month.
Yeah,
I was kind of excited for it. I knew it was going to be a horror sort of Wicker Man type thing, but very gruesome. The guy who did it is the guy who did The Raid and the sequel to The Raid, but I knew it was going to be very gory and all this. But it had Dan Stevens in it and Michael Sheen in it.
Okay.
I love both of them. Very excited for it. Skip it. Everyone can skip it.
It's bad, huh?
It is really gory. And the story is weak and cliched.
Oh.
It is very well performed and nicely filmed, but the story is weak, and there's emotionally disturbing shit in aside from the violent, gory stuff in it. There's just fucked upness in it that's really unpleasant. I stopped about 60% of the way through, and then the next day I was like, I should finish it out, and then I finished it out, and I was like, yeah, I didn't need to do that. So,
all right.
Sorry to say, you can totally skip it, and I still love both of those guys, but yeah, no, it was not good.
Oh well.
All right. If you'd like to know more about horror movies, and angels, I don't know, figure it out. In the meantime, though, if you want to tell us more about it, go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us where you fear to tread and why Jazz did bring up James A. Caster, and if she really did, or I'm not imagining it correctly, or what. And then listen again next week, because we're probably going to do this for another 400 episodes. So, yeah, it's delicious.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.